Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live across the United States of America, across Europe, and across the world, this is Human Rights Radio, and this is your host, David Duke. And today, I'm always happy to have on with me a really fine economist, historian, international relations expert, former teacher in many major universities, and just really an incredible guy who has a great deal of knowledge. And as few people, I've had a chance to travel the world and meet with academics all over the world in different universities and give guest lectures. And he's, to me, one of the most knowledgeable people that I've ever met, certainly even eclipsing me in a lot of areas of international law and understanding as well. And I'm always willing to recognize that. One thing that's said, Socrates used to say, you know, it's to know is to know that you don't know everything. And I've always had a plan in my life to get my information, hang around with people and learn from people who know about a particular subject even more than I did, and I always felt myself fairly well educated. Dr. Patrick Slattery, welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the kind introduction.
Well, you deserve it. And we're going to have a very interesting show today. We're going to talk about a couple of issues. First of all, I do believe, just to give a little preface here, you know, it's becoming obvious, the Jewish domination of our country. I mean, even David Brooks a few years ago, back in 2003, I think, in the New York Times, or 2005, did an article called The Chosen Getting in the New York Times. And in that article, he talks about how the Jews have taken over academia. And you and I have gone through that, how there is a discriminatory policy in the leading universities of the United States of America, the Ivy League, for instance, where Jews were given special treatment. Even when they were, say, because they were discriminated against in the past, they literally have a lot of quotas in universities in this country starting out in the 1950s, where Jews, the quota of Jews was 15%. It was like that was the bottom ratio, 15%, which is basically, it's more than five times greater than their percentage of the population, 15%. But the interesting thing is, in terms of ACT and SAT testing for university, and in terms of academic abilities, the average Jew did not, in terms of the people that qualified, in terms of the people that took, for instance, the National Merit Scholarships, which is one of the major studies or tests that people use for college admissions, Jews did not do that much better than their population distribution. Their power was really based on the fact that they took control of these universities, that 15% and the colleagues in there helped them influence the university, influence the hiring of the provosts and hirings of the presidents of the universities. And of course, we see that now, even though there's been, because of the fact that it's been diversified, and this was their policy anyway, they had a lot more kickback. And because they also promoted a lot of minority positions in their removal of white people from the dominant controlling factor in the United States, and they wanted to do that to make way for themselves, they ended up having a number of people in there that also started talking about Jewish racism and the aspects of American policy that were serving the interest of Jews rather than the interest of humanity or the interest of the United States or the interest of certainly these people around the world. So welcome to the show, and we're going to be talking about how that people are learning about the Jewish problem today, but they're trying to disassociate it from the Jewish problem and saying, in effect, that, well, it seems like maybe Jews might control our policy or Israel controls our policy, but it's really just American policy. America benefits from the Jews. It's like Biden said, if they didn't have the State of Israel, we'd have to invent one because we need that. It's like a aircraft carrier, so a massive aircraft carrier in the middle of the Middle East. The truth is, Israel was the cause of our wars in the Middle East and so many other places in the world. So let's just start off with that premise and how that there's a lot of people out there, a number of people, even Finkelstein, I heard, and others who kind of give us this story that it's American empire that's about this, And it's not the Jews controlling America, it's America using the Jews, at least when it's convenient, rather than the real weight of power being the Jewish power.
I think what's going on is that a high level of Jewish power that's been dominating our politics really for decades. It's even hard to pinpoint a real starting point. Maybe it's come on somewhat gradually, but I think during our lifetimes, it's pretty fair to say that American politics and American society has been, I use the word dominated. Mm-hmm. It's not as strong a word as control, but dominated, right? They tend to get their way. They're getting their way for the most part. And that's been the situation.
Before we go on, let's talk about dominating and control for a second. I just want to weigh in for a moment there. But the ultimate, though, in terms of the most critical issues, like getting into the First and Second World War, these different policies of the Federal Reserve, the policies of the banking system in this country, and the most important things, they've seemed to be able to control us, and these major wars in the Middle East control us, which goes beyond domination. But maybe domination is the best word. What do you think?
Well, so when you dominate, you tend to get your way.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan dominated the NBA during the 1990s, and with the exception of the years that he was in retirement, he won. He personally seemed to have won about six championships straight. We've had this situation of a high level of Jewish power for a long time. And during that period of time, there's been various narratives that have been developed to obfuscate that fact. And so you hear a lot about the military-industrial complex or the American empire, a variety of things. Even Israel, because Israel is a high priority for American Jews. Israel is not American Jews, and so you hear about the Israel lobby, but what's going on now?
It's like Jews are not, that's not associated with Jews necessarily. That's just the Israeli lobby, and therefore there's lots and lots of Jews that oppose that. Well, there's not lots and lots. There is certainly a portion, but it's a small proportion.
Right, but I think the big change has come with the Jewish power structure, which is the way I talk about it. They are doing things with much less camouflage. They're doing things much more directly. So things that are happening now, it's harder. It's become harder and harder to ignore the prominent Jewish role in all of this. And the good two examples are the Epstein business, which is obviously Jewish, and it's hard to deny it's Jewish.
The Epstein class. I wonder who that class is composed of. The Jewish holy seed.
Right.
He's one of those holy seed people, which have pure souls and are superior to everyone.
Which has attracted huge amount of attention, and then the wars in the Middle East. Starting with the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and then moving on to these attacks on Iran, and the leading Jewish role in this can't be denied. And so people who have been able to whistle past the graveyard or ignore things, pretend not to notice, they're suddenly, and I'm talking about like kind of across the board, podcasters and this and that, suddenly having to confront it. And, whether you're talking about people like the Young Turks or you're talking about Tucker Carlson, they're talking about Jewish power, but they're new at it, and they're not good at it, and so they're going for Chomsky kind of explanations in some cases, because Chomsky was somebody who talked about the problems created by Jewish power
and Jewish capitalism and Jewish, this control over our policies and our military policies, Cold War, and all the rest of it. Yeah,
right. He's been known as, for instance, a critic of Israel. But at the end of the day, his analysis is that Israel's controlled by the United States,
And
and
that,
not
yeah,
vice
and listen,
versa.
one, and one, let me add one thing to it, and that United States is simply by corporate greed and corporate power rather than Jewish corporate greed and Jewish corporate power, that because, as we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, that in terms of real corporate health and monetary health and economic health for the American people, the American consumer who buys products from the vast majority of business in the United States and critical to our country, these policies and these wars are inimical. It's inimical. It's terrible toward the well-being of the American people to expend all this money in these insane wars and have all the social disruption, even among our own people, created by those wars. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, and so for Chomsky, he sets up this what I consider a false dichotomy. You know, either America controls Israel or Israel controls America. You know, sets up as you know the one state controls the other or vice versa. And what you have in the United States, it's the you don't have a an American governed government, American state that's looking out for American interests. You've got an American state that has, to a very large extent, come under the domination or control, partial control, whatever, but has come under a heavy influence from a Jewish power structure. So that you have a Jewish power structure that effectively runs the United States on behalf of what are perceived as Jewish interests. And the Jewish power structure is not a monolith, and there can be disagreements within it, but in general, the support for Israel is seen as being in Jewish interests. There are sometimes the state of Israel goes too far, and you know, there are diaspora Jews in America who think, you know, Israel's bad optics, and they try to rein it back. And you get things like the JCPOA and things like that. We can discuss that later if you want. But
Yeah,
you
let's
have an
just.
America. I just wanted to just sum
Go
it
ahead.
up. An American state that is under the domination of a Jewish power structure, and it is utilizing the strength of the American state on behalf of Israel. Does that mean Israel controls America? No, that doesn't mean Israel controls America, but you could say pro-Israel American Jews dominate America, and
And whether you talk
that's
about
really
pro-Israel American
difficult.
Jews, obviously in the great elite of American Jews and the most powerful American billionaire Jews who are tied into this kind of Jewish mafia and banking and politics and all the rest of it, these people are obviously extremely pro-Israel to the detriment of the United States and to the rest of the world and all the people in the Middle East. The Iraq War and these other wars that we've had in the Middle East, according to, I just read a study yesterday, it was 4.5 million people at least, at lives were expended in these wars. You know, one of the brilliant things that you said, and I, you've had a lot of really quotable and memorable statements. I wish we were had a bigger media platform. We used to have a much bigger one when I was on YouTube and Twitter and things like that, but we don't have that today. But you once made a great statement, which was so insightful, when you said, you know, the thing is, when people see certain differences of conflict, while you see certain Jews that say, "Hey, Israel, you've got to stop this for a while," or "You've got to have the ceasefire," it's like, so they would interpret this as people against the Jewish interest doing this. In more cases, it was really about a conflict between Jews. It's like, as you said, they're not monolithic. And you used to say it this way, and it's a very clever statement, very powerful statement. He says, "We got to understand it's Jewish, it's all Jewish power, but Jews are divided between what we call the crazy Jews and the insane Jews, and more of those seem to dominate." Which is, and let me finish the
Crazy
statement,
and kind
please. Clever
of
Jew, the
okay.
crazy Jews and clever Jews. That was brilliant.
Crazy and kind of, and that was in
Well, you used the word
a
clever
private
originally. I
town hall.
remember very clearly, but go
Okay,
ahead.
but what I use in public would be the what is it? The cash in your chips and come back tomorrow, Jews, and the double or nothing Jews, and the
Right.
double or nothing. Who, aka the crazy Jews, have held sway for the past decade or more.
Yeah,
I
a
think
good
I think
example. Go ahead.
About a decade or so.
A good example of that's one thing that I've been talking about. People can get Jewish supremacists in my book. I'm the author, basically, or the popularizer of that. That's even admitted if you do an AI program about it. It's admitted that I began that term. But it's interesting to look at the fact and the important fact that years ago, I said when I wrote My Awakening, which was written primarily in the 1980s and 90s and then published in the late 90s, and then, of course, Jewish Supremacism that came out in 2007. But in that book itself, what I'm saying in there is that Jews are becoming more radical. As they gain more and more power, they're becoming more overt. And perhaps the reason why there's so much more understanding of the Jewish issue is because their power is so ubiquitous. It's about everywhere you turn. I just, for instance, I was looking into the Kim Iverson show and Kim Iverson. So I found the contact for the show, and her contact, even though she talks about the Jews pretty well, was a Mr. Bernstein. Now, I don't know what he's like, and maybe
Unbelievable.
he's an anti-Jewish Jew, but it's amazing how many gatekeepers they have. I don't
Yeah, they're in all 50 states.
know.
That's
And they're in the
that was all
capitals
that
of all 50 states, and they're in the capitals of
was,
most of the Western nations, concentrated.
yeah. Well, and this is when I talk about the Jewish power structure, I talk about it as a structure. Because it's got like a lot of different aspects to it, a lot of different parts to it. And one part, because a lot of people like to say, well, it's not all Jews. A lot of people, we have this massive allergy about talking about Jews as a group.
As a group,
We
that's right.
there's whereas we don't with, Chinese or Germans or white people or other groups. We don't, people talk about Catholics, they'll talk about whatever. But there's this massive allergy to talking about saying anything critical about Jews as a group. I guess you can say they're smart, but to say anything critical about Jews as a group. And so there's this tendency to want to just skim off a few bad guys and scapegoat everything on a few bad guys, and then the rest are, if they're not completely blameless, they're the real victims in all of this. That's
Yeah, as it chooses
the
the real
tendency.
victims, so.
That's the
Yeah.
tendency. And one quick point I want to make is,
Sure.
the
Take your
there is
time.
this role for your average, perfectly, decent Jew that you get along with at the office or at school or whatever, but still having a role in this because that person's presence, unless they come out and are vocally critical of Jewish power themselves. Just their presence is going to stifle discussion of Jewish power. So it makes it if like if you're in a larger group, and I remember this from
That's so true.
Palestinian
That's right. You can't, you don't want to
Palestinian
offend
scholars.
any individual Jew that you
You
know
don't.
in the group, so you don't dare say anything that may have a bad reflection as Jews as a group, even though Jews as a group have been a real problem. And Jews as a group constitute a legitimate group to talk about. Just, the media talks about Russians. I'll give one small example, and I want to go back to what you were saying there. And that's a perfect example is this. So a few years ago after the Ukraine war started, so they had this some articles in major media made a big deal out of the fact that this Russian guy was with his family, and he's at the Red Sea or something like that, or he's in Egypt along the coast or something. And so he's they're sharks. And apparently he was attacked by sharks. And you had massive media all over the world making snide comments, Jewish commentators, and just massive media, and a lot of goy as well, making comments about, oh yeah, this Russian was getting hit by, oh, we're so sad that this individual, just a Russian tourist, right, at the sea, is getting attacked by sharks. He's got a family, he's got kids in the beach with his wife, but he's going to get attacked by sharks. And the fact that we've had Russians dismissed from orchestras they led, they were musicians, we've had Russian athletes prevented from doing the incredible sports and other events that they were doing, top of the world, from exercising that because they were Russians. The irony of this and the hypocrisy of this is legend, isn't it? It's crazy when you think about it, but you can't talk about Jews as a group. When you talk about French, if they do something, I remember how we were criticizing the French, or at least that's what the Jewish masters of the media were doing, because the French were pushing back a little bit against the Iraq war, which was really a Jewish war, a war they wanted. And they would say, well, we're going to stop eating French fries, or we're going to call them treason fries or something. It's so fascinating to see the double standards in all these issues.
Right. So I was going to bring up 20 years ago, the late spring, summer of 2006, you had an Israeli, carpet bombing operation in Gaza, and then you had an Israeli attack in Beirut. They were leveling neighborhoods of Beirut, okay? And I remember right about that time going to these Palestinian Solidarity Committee meetings that, it was on the university campus, and they were well attended, and you'd have various people speak up. And the thing was, nobody was bashful about talking about white people. They weren't bashful talking about America, but there were like, there's the what was the group called? Jewish Voices for Peace. I think Jewish Voices for Peace were there, and they let everybody know they were there, and that completely stifled discussion on the Jewish aspect of this. So everybody had to be very, very careful. And I'm not saying that this Jewish Voices for Peace had sinister motives. Jews just, they do tend to organize within their own group. And I think, I think these people, I'm assuming that they were all sincere. If they weren't all sincere, I think the bulk of them were relatively sincere. But in the back of their mind, because as they do operate, Jews more than other people tend to think what's good for the group. And I think a lot of them do tend to think it's good for the Jews for us to be organizing against this.
Well, I noticed something when you were speaking, something that became apparent to me. I hope it's apparent to our listeners and the realities of this society we live in, right? So here's the situation. Anytime they have a group called, if Jews are in favor of Palestine, it seems to me that the important thing they do, now, if they want to say, I'm a Jew, even I'm a Jew, I'm telling you the Jews are doing bad things, that this is crazy. Like Finkelstein will say something like, these Jews are crazy. They're maniacs in Israel. They're psychopaths. They're murderers. And how 92% of them think that they haven't used enough force in Gaza, killing all these men, women, and children. That's one thing, right? But when you join a group called Jews, Jews for Peace or whatever like that, and so what you're actually trying to say to people is it's not really the Jews. Look at all these Jews. It's the same way they do about Judaism. Now, if you go in any bookstore and you read books about Christianity, you'll find thousands. You look in the catalog, the dialogue of books, the books in print. Or you go to Amazon, you look up for books that are very, very critical of Jesus Christ, saying it was a fraudulent resurrection and all the rest of it, or the Christians are no good and they cause these wars and Christianity. There's thousands and thousands of books. And then you look right at who wrote the books that are really caustic, really horrific, a lot of them books about Christianity. But if you take on Judaism, and you expose the fact that Judaism is a form of the ultimate form of a master race ideology. And even reading the Old Testament and reading the Talmud and reading the Zohar and reading the Kabbalah and reading the Tanya. Tanya and Zohar, two of the main texts. And Jews have become more radical over the years of what's called rabbinical Judaism. So they literally have celebrations in that Old Testament book. Now, I'm not trying to criticize the Old Testament or criticize Christians. I follow the Old Testament too. It's 4/5 of our Bible. whatever the situation is, it's four-fifths of the Bible before you get to the New Testament. But Jesus did preach that he's for a new covenant, and he says the old covenant doesn't work, and I've come for all mankind. And he rebuked the Jews for what their hatred against Samaritans, and their hatred against the Amalekites, and their hatred against all the other people, and their massacres and so forth. He said we got to protect children. But the interesting thing is that if you go against, if you just simply state that Judaism, even the Holy Seed, which is a racial idea, the Holy Seed in the actual Jewish Hebrew term, is translated as Holy Seed in our English versions of the Bible, ultimately. But the actual version of that word, Holy Seed, what they translate as Holy Seed, actually means, it's called Zera Ketesh, which means holy semen. It's kind of funny when you think about, and that's used 250 times in the Old Testament, and they preach that they are a holy race.
Can I just say holy semen, Batman?
Yeah, holy semen.
Can I say
right?
That?
You can't, right?
Batman.
Another good example of this as well is how they've been very powerful in the use of etymology or the sources of words and how to use words as propaganda. It's often said that the inventor of the term anti-Semitism was a German anti-Semite, this professor in Germany, in the 1860s or 70s. It wasn't. The guy that actually originated the term, so-called anti-Semitism, was a Jewish professor in Austria. And I believe that the evidence is, very clearly, that anti-Semitism was a perfect way for Jews to cite their enemies, because it's really a cover. In other words, anti-Semitism isn't anti-Semitism. You're not going, there's far more Semites who are non-Jews, even anti-Jewish in the world today, than there are Jews. So what is anti-Semitism, and why is it anti-Semitism? The truth is that people who are opposing Jews, they're not anti-Semites. What they are is they're anti-Jewish, meaning there's two ways you can define that and two ways that are linked together. One is the Jewish religion being anti-Jewish, meaning Jewish faith and the Jewish religion, which I can show is a racially founded and a religion that says Jews have a basic right to rule the world and God favors them over all people. And they have the right to, for instance, practice usury against Gentiles, but not against themselves. They have the right to enslave Gentiles, but not themselves. How it's meritorious for them to get, the hands and Gentile possessions. No one can literally come out and say, look at, they can criticize Christianity all the time, but they can't criticize Judaism. And these are the same people who tell us that the worst evil is racist evil. And yet there's no more racist and genocidal religion or ideology in the history of the world more than Judaism. What do you think about that point? Can you comment on that and your analysis of that aspect of anti-Semitism? Why is it anti-Semitism? See, they don't want to say that if you go against Gaza, they don't want to say you're anti-Jewish. Because that says who's doing Gaza. They don't want to say anti-Jewish people are criticizing the genocide in Gaza, because you're pointing out that Jews, and they are Jews, that are doing these genocides, correct? But if you say anti-Semitic, or if you just say Israel, for instance, it doesn't have the same kind of power, does it, to residents? Whereas when you talk about Russians, you talk about Russian atrocities, or Russian campaign interference. You will never say Jewish campaign interference, and yet it's Jewish billionaires that really control the American politics. I'd like you to examine that for a second and analyze that in terms of how they use the term anti-Semitism rather than anti-Jewishness, when it's really a more proper term.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that the term used against people who are critical of Jewish power doesn't contain the word Jew in it. Instead, it contains the word Semite. And Semite actually is originally a linguistic term or philological. Back in the late 1700s, you had a.
And then it talked about the Semitic people. It became a racial classification,
It became racial later, just referring to the people who spoke those languages. But it's originally a linguistic term from the late 1700s. And these people they're calling anti-Semites, I don't think any of them have have a problem with three-letter verbs that have vowels in the middle. You know, I don't think that this is really the issue. But
Right.
the one thing I want to raise is this: the position of the Holocaust in all of this. And so there's a period of time and a geographic location. A period of time, 1933 to 1945. A geographic location, anywhere that that Germany or its allies controlled any part of Europe that they controlled during that period of time, at least for some part of that period of time. Any Jew who existed there and did not die is considered a Holocaust survivor. The
Exactly.
Holocaust
In all of Europe,
itself.
even if they're off in the Soviet Union, way away from the German armies, never captured, whether they're in even in Germany, by the way, a Jewish professor the other day on the Katie Helper show, Jewish history professor who's taught there as well as in Belgium, he pointed out that in Germany, all during the Second World War, in Berlin, in the capital city of Germany, there was an entire huge hospital in Berlin. Just for Jews. It was run by Jews, Jewish doctors, Jewish administrators, who weren't, by the way, shipped off to the camps, but they ran their own hospital. Unlike in Gaza, they weren't bombed, right? They weren't kept from getting antibiotics or anesthesia when they're
Right.
injured or they're sick. But that's kind of interesting in its own self, just understanding that that existed.
So,
Go ahead.
well, so the what I just said was that is the definition of a Holocaust survivor. So the definition
Right.
that's been used by Jewish organizations in lawsuits and whatnot.
Right.
That is a Holocaust survivor. And working backwards from that, then the Holocaust winds up being anything that happened to Jews in that large area of Europe during those 12 years. Anything that happened to them is part of the Holocaust. So the Holocaust is just this giant bucket of events. And so what does it mean then to deny the Holocaust, right? So you can be talking about there's a whole lot of events that have been alleged to have happened during that period over the years that have turned out not to be, you know, turned out to be fanciful. And any investigation into a lot of the events is prohibited by law in so many of the countries where they were alleged to have taken place. So you've got this, what you could call, what would be a good term for it, mythologized almost. Not to say that, you know, the elements of myth may or may not be true, but they, you know, they've become kind of legend. They're
It's like a religion. It's like as a dogma, and they have all these different points of dogma. Just like you have a dogma on Christianity about obviously the resurrection, you have a dogma about different aspects, the Trinity, whatever, and you have a dogma about the Holocaust, and you can't question it. I mean, to
Can't
question different
question it.
aspects, for instance, was there a plan by the Germans? Was there an intentional plan to kill all the Jews of Europe? And, you know, was that going on? If you question any part of the extermination issue, was the main form of killing, was it, you know, gas chambers, or can that be contested somewhat? Or was it only the Germans that practiced things like torture, even though we know after the war we were torturing German officers, according to Senator Taft in congressional testimony, we were torturing German officers. 125, in fact, in this whole section of officers were being tried in these Nuremberg type trials. And of the 125, 124 had been tortured by having pliers put on their reproductive organs, including their testes. You can't even hardly imagine that. And they also threatened to have their wives and their children raped unless they sign confessions, unless they testified against the others. They don't talk about these things. But even Finkelstein, in his own book, The Holocaust Industry, that says at one point, I know in one of his interviews, he said, it's understandable that many things about the Holocaust will not be believed when you investigate some of the insanely crazy stories of so-called Holocaust survivors, which were so crazy and so made up. You can't blame for people doubting some aspects of the Holocaust story, but you can't even doubt it, and you can't doubt any part of the dogma that surrounds it. It's like a religious thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's become something that for the most part cannot be questioned, and it plays a very, very large role in our society. And you have these Jewish groups that purposely promote Holocaust remembrance, Holocaust education, Holocaust memorials, and nothing can be questioned about it. I mean, what I say is at least aspects of it have been exaggerated, embellished, and taken out of context, decontextualized. That's what I say. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, you can't discuss it. It's become a massive power resource, because when if you don't follow up your whatever mild criticism you have of Israel with, oh, well, it's not all Jews. If you don't immediately follow it up with that, and the reason people do follow it up is because they don't want to be accused of wanting to kill 6 million Jews. You know,
worse than that, they'll say the essence of Judaism, for example, is about the brotherhood of man. Jews believe in loving everybody and love thy neighbor as thyself. They quote Leviticus. They just don't quote the verses before that particular verse where it says only Jews are neighbors. Only Jews can be neighbors, the sons of the Jewish people, which means the whole Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt bear false witness against thy neighbor. What that means is the Ten Commandments were not a universal statement of human rights. Thou shalt not kill human beings, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not hurt them, rape them, hurt whatever. It was actually a pass saying that this Ten Commandments, the commandment of God was, oh, You cannot kill your neighbors. You can't kill fellow Jews. Which, what does that say? The underlying thing is saying you can kill non-Jews. You just can't kill Jews. Now, one other point too I wanted to make, and I want to get your comment on that. I want you to think about this while I'm saying it, and let's talk about the etymology a second again. And let's just talk about this. For instance,
I did have a point that I was trying to get to then. Quite finished.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you because I've been letting you speak a lot, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll go back to this point in a second. I'll interrupt myself. That's fine.
Make a note of it. So the Holocaust story has become a massive power resource for Jews. And when people, because it stifles conversation, it stifles discussion of Jewish power in general, it stifles discussion of Jewish group behavior.
It's like and farting in church. You just don't do that.
I guess so. So when they're criticizing Israel, are constantly evoking aspects of the Holocaust. They're saying, oh, this is a Holocaust by the, or saying Netanyahu's like Hitler. And what they're doing every time they do that, they reinforce this Holocaust story, which not only is a power resource for Jews, but it also is massive. It like really impacts the Jewish psyche in a really bad way, because why is it that Jews in Israel commit these atrocities? Why is it that Jews outside Israel support Jews committing these atrocities?
Because they're taught that non-Jews are not human beings. They're evil people, always ready to Holocaust them. And by the way,
always ready to Holocaust them.
Yeah, and I would like to also point out to you, again, this is one of the things I was going to say about this. I was going to go on the other subject, but we'll talk about this first, is the fact that when you talked about the average Jew, now the average Jew doesn't have to be a supporter of the genocide in Gaza. It doesn't have to be a supporter of the Jewish state, even though the average Jew in America does support the Jewish state. And certainly the most organized Jews, like the Council of Jewish Presidents, the 52 largest Jewish organizations in America, are all supportive of Israel. None of them are opposed to Israel. Every single one of them supports them and supports what's going on in Gaza and supports what's going on in the Iraq war and supported what's going on right now in the Iran war. So, but here's the situation. These Jews grow up with this litany of the Holocaust, and they grow up with this litany that all Gentiles are evil. They're like the Palestinians. They're Amalekites. They are no good. They're dangerous. And they have this emotional attachment. They see movies like Sophie's Choice, where this beautiful woman, very white-looking human, so whites can identify with it, I guess, psychologically, just like they made Exodus with Paul Newman, right? With a Shiksa girlfriend, by the way, as a hero that Europeans could identify with because they needed European support for Israel. But the interesting thing is that when they take these things and work these things, it's always this way. It's like if Sophie's Choice was about a woman, she goes to a camp, and the Nazis come up with a ridiculous suggestion, which sounds totally made up, but it works in a Hollywood movie because it's just a script movie. Doesn't have to be any truth to it, right? And it says, so she's got two children. And they say, well, we don't have space. We got to gas one of your kids. We got to kill one of your children. So you have to make a choice. That's Sophie's Choice. And imagine the trauma and so forth and the connection and the tears that could be shed by Jews and having this, you know, about Jews. So what they do is they develop this constant story, just like the Exodus story, where even in the end, they have 10 plagues in Egypt. In the end, the ultimate action against the Egyptians was killing the firstborn of the Egyptian children, where they have a big celebration of it, put the blood of the lamb on the door, and they celebrate killing the firstborn of Egyptian children. You know, Christ would be the first one against that. And then Christians don't celebrate Passover, by the way, except Christian Zionists, maybe. So, but it just shows you that when you have this kind of propaganda constantly, it tells the silent message to every Jew is we got to support our fellow Jews. If there's another Jew, a Jew and five Gentiles vying for the job, and we can have influence in who gets the job, we're going to favor the Jew. We got to favor our fellow Jews because we're persecuted. We've been holocausted. We've been murdered. So that's, you know, that's to me makes sense of what you were saying about how the even if they're a Jew and they're not active involved, they're still going to support the Jewish race, the Jewish entity, the Jewish genealogy, so to speak, the Jewish holy seed, because they believe that the holy seed is under threat of extermination or harm.
Right. And it doesn't mean in every case they're going to do that, but what matters is that they
it's
are
an
more
emotional
likely,
commitment, though. I mean, they are raised more, from their mother's milk with that.
Yeah, they are raised from their mother's milk with that, and they are more likely to, for instance, in making a job hire a decision, bring somebody onto a corporate board. They are more likely to favor their own than other groups are, and that's I mean, you started off the show talking about the students, you know, the students in the elite universities, and Ron Unz. We did good work on that. Ron Unz did some work with really, really robust data, but so there's, you know, I said the Holocaust,
and we did too. We did some great work with Bjorns, who was. I just wanted to interject something here.
Okay, go ahead.
I did a lot of work with Bjorns. This was a member of the Karolinska Institute from Sweden and from Finland, right? And he was an immigrant to America on a scholarship. He did a great paper. I worked with him on it, showing how that the Nobel Prize Committee was practicing massive discrimination against non-Jews, because it was actually controlled by a guy whose father was head of the World Jewish Congress, believe it or not. And what they were doing, and the major newspapers, by the way, in terms of the selection for the Nobel Prizes, were done primarily by the coverage of the seven leading papers in Sweden, which, by the way, all seven were run by Jews who favored Jewish doctors, Jewish scientists, Jewish whatever, to get Nobel Prizes. And this isn't even, you know, mentioned in this. Yet they have this culture about how Jews are smarter and Jews are the best and all these things. And yet they actually had this through their discriminatory policies. And finally, I wanted to get back to what I had to say. Then I got to bring up that one video with Chang.
But Ching. I'd like to finish.
Let's go
point.
Quickly. Go ahead, and I'll okay. Then I'll get so, the other thing. But I got to get to that.
So I said that the Holocaust was exaggerated, embellished, and decontextualized, taken out of context. And the context is important because just as Jews, because they believe the Holocaust story, are more prone to commit atrocities because that's the context that they were raised in. The people in those parts of Europe in the 1930s, early 1940s, there was a context there. That was a context of the immediate aftermath of the
Bolsheviks, killing tens and tens of millions and millions of Christians by Jewish Bolsheviks, right?
So, yeah, and, you know, their allies taking control of Hungary and Bavaria in the wake of World War
I. Mass murders there, too. Right.
Holodomor, all of this stuff. So there was a context. There was a reason that... that in some areas, German armies were viewed as liberators. There was a reason where there was suspicion and hostility against Jewish communities, and it doesn't.
And there's a reason why people in Germany they didn't vote for Hitler simply because they were for Hitler or against Jews, because they knew that Hitler was anti-communist, and they knew what the communist Jews, and that's who Hitler was opposing, communist Jews especially, that they were a threat. And they committed these mass murders in the Soviet Union. That's why. But that's not the explanation we get from our history classes.
Right. I mean, there was a context to all of this. And that was right. The point.
Let me go to this, and then I'll go to the other thing. I wanted to say for a minute, good example with the etymology. We're talking about the Holocaust again and anti-Semitism. Notice that in the aspect of the Second War and the Holocaust, it's always about the Nazi racists and in the Holocaust, and they committed all these 6 million deaths. Well, we know that communism, according to the Black Book of Communism, is one of the biggest authorities on it, about 100 million victims around the world of communism. And communism was overwhelmingly a Jewish movement. But nobody identifies communism and what went on in the Soviet Union as a result of this Jewish tribal takeover of Russia and destruction of the Christian Tsar and the takeover of the Christian nation of Russia by these Jews who hated the Tsar. They called him an anti-Semite too, by the way. And he was basically protective of the Russian minority, including the Russian peasants who were being taken advantage of by Jewish vice, by Jewish usury, and this other kinds of things. So, but there's never mention of the Jewish racism was involved in communism. Now, finally, let's play this video if we can. It's a short one, but I've got to play it with Ching, and you will get your comments on it, my comments. Here we go.
It's very popular to say that the United States did this war because Donald Trump is controlled by Benjamin Netanyahu, the Zionists, and Israel. But the way I hear you explaining it now, it seems like some kind of bigger, long game that the United States is playing for. We've talked about the Greater North American Project here, and yes. Was that just kind of a diversion that to blame it on Israel, or is that real, or has the establishment been planning this all along and Donald Trump is just their tool?
So first point is that if you don't believe anything I say, then go to the Pentagon website, the Department of War website, and download the National Security Strategy. It is in black and white. It tells you exactly what the plan is. It is to contain China. It is to control the Western Hemisphere, something called the Donrell Doctrine. And it is to cannibalize America's allies. Okay, it's very black and white in that paper. That's the first point. Second point is that Trump doesn't have the power to do whatever he wants. I mean, he is really the agent or the puppet or the scapegoat for the military-industrial complex. And the third point I will make is that if you just look at history, when empires decline, they behave in this manner where empire, at its height, it relies on consent. It relies on soft power. When it declines and its allies turn away from the empire, what the empire does is use force. use piracy, use pure power, might becomes right. So what America's doing right now fits into the classical imperial decline pattern.
What America's doing right now, yet this guy says himself that Pax Judaica is poised to take over, to replace Pax Americana as the new empire of the world. So when he says this stuff, I'm sorry to say, I like a lot of things he says. And he's talked about some of the crimes of Israel against Lebanon, some of the crimes against the people of Gaza, the crimes against Iran, and so forth. But the idea to compare this to the Roman Empire is ridiculous, because the Roman Empire did fall. It fell from the inside because of a lot of factors. But what the takeover of America was, a takeover of America by a very hostile minority that wanted to take America and use it for their own process of Jewish hegemony on a global basis. You cannot compare the fall of America to the fall of Rome. We have not just fallen like a way that an apple becomes ripe and then becomes rotten and falls from the tree. We've been purposely rotted and taken over by Jews for their own ultimate experiences. Your thoughts real quick. We've got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay. These people are talking about Jewish power now because, like I said before, now it's in our face because of the Epstein, because of the Gaza genocide, because of the Iran war. It's in our face like never before. And they're new at it. Either they were ignoring it before or hadn't figured it out before, but they're new at it. And so they're coming up with all of these things. These are the first tier excuses and diversions. Why aren't they talking to people who, like somebody like me, who's been talking about this for a couple decades, and you, who've been doing it for 50 years, yeah. You're saying things. I mean, you were ahead of the curve. You were ahead of their analysis 50 years ago.
It's like I don't exist. I've been hareemed. I've been blotted out. That's what they say in the Old Testament. You can blot out even the memory.
Why doesn't Jimmy Dore have you on?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. That's it. We're out of time. Thanks so much for being with me. And I'll just close by saying this. They also keep talking about the military-industrial complex. That's an old, worn-out, and not true term anymore. If you look at the biggest contributors in the Democratic Party, Republican Party, the biggest contributors of Donald Trump weren't industrial-military complex. It was people like Marcus, you know, in Home Depot. It was people like the Adelsons that gave $500-600 million to Trump. That who is the real power. 18 of the 19 contributors to Clinton, not one of them was an arms dealer. They were all hedge fund operators and banksters and all that rest of it. That's what's going on. And by the way, the SPLC has been called the carpet for their vile and destructive activities and illegal activities in America. It's about time, folks. I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, just keep thinking free. I love you. Go to Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470, and try to support us if you possibly can. I love you.